The next speaker is William Valley. I don't know the affiliation, so you can.
Thank you. Yeah, my name's Richard Wally, and I'm from Rothamsted in the UK. And thank you for staying till the end of the session. So I'm going to talk about models for penetrometer resistance in soil. And so to start with, what's a penetrometer? Is this switch on? So this is a penetrometer, is essentially a steel needle that can be pushed down through the soil profile, and the force to do that can be measured by a force transducer, then by dividing the force by the area of a cone, you can get a penetrometer pressure. And so the next question is, why is this useful? And in fact, this data set compiles a series of experiments where the strength of the surface layer of soil has been manipulated either by compacting it or by various irrigation treatments. What we find is that as the strength of the surface layer increases, the crop yield decreases. So it's important to understand how soil management affects penetrometer resistance. And also our plant science colleagues are interested to know whether this decrease in yield is due to some root-sourced signaling that stunts shoot development, or whether it's poor resource capture by roots in strong soil. So there are lots of models for penetrometer resistance, and some of them have been around for some time. This is one from 1966 by Farrell and Greeson, and it's quite a complicated model, and it's got different zones of soil deformation around the penetrometer tip, and you can predict penetrometer pressure very accurately with it. But the trouble is, to use it, you need to spend a lot of time in the lab doing some quite detailed soil characterizations. So this is the other end of other extreme, if you like, which is a simple model. It relates penetrometer pressure to the product of saturation and matrix potential and soil density. So this encapsulates effects of water release characteristics and soil compaction on soil strength. And this is a data set, so it's originally measured by Toe and Kay, which they shared with us. And using this data, we can fit this rather simple model very well to this data that relates bulk density, soil moisture status, to the penetrometer resistance. And even the simple model tells us something intuitive about how soil management affects strength. The different carbon contents affect the water release curve, and this is reflected in the simple model, as is the effect of increasing organic carbon content on bulk density. So as carbon content goes up, density goes down. So this simple model gives us an explanation of why higher organic carbon gives rise to weaker or mechanically weaker soils. Another use for the simple model is that if we can measure matrix potential and water content, we can use it in the field to calculate penetrometer resistance. One of the problems with penetrometers is that it's only a fairly narrow window of time we can use them effectively, because not much drying is needed for the soil to be too strong for them to be pushed down to the ground. So we can predict penetrometer resistance in the field with a simple model. We need to measure matrix potential, and in the future we also plan to use thermo TDR to measure density, and that would give us the prospect of having buried sensors and allowing us to calculate penetrometer pressure. And in fact, if we compare this simple model with a pedo transfer function rather similar to the ones that we've just heard of, we can get reasonably good agreement. But one of the problems with these simple models is that they don't take account of depth. And this is some data from a field site in Woburn in Bedfordshire, which shows that penetrometer pressure or resistance increases with depth, even though density and moisture status are relatively similar. So we need to encapsulate this somehow in relatively simple models. And this is also data taken from the literature that shows, in addition to depth, soil management, such as compaction, also affects penetrometer resistance with depth. And at quite shallow depths, you can get very high penetrometer resistances. So we need to make simplifying assumptions. And what we've did was to assume that penetrometer resistance was proportional to an elastic modulus. And because we'd been working on shear waves, we assumed that penetrometer resistance was proportional to the small strain shear modulus. And that's given by the product of density and shear wave speed squared. And this little cartoon here shows a shear wave, which is a mechanical wave, which when the soil is excited at one end, it travels through the soil, and we can measure its velocity. Now, shear waves are sensitive to soil compaction, and this graph shows an input shear wave and one that's detected some time later at a confining pressure of 100 kilopascals. So, and if we increase the confining pressure, the shear wave travels more quickly. Shear waves are also sensitive to matrix potential. So in drier soils, you get quicker shear wave velocities. That's due to the effect of the capillary pressure on the effective stress in soil. In fact, we developed a rather simple model to relate shear wave velocity to void ratio, applied pressure, matrix potential, and also the matrix potential at the air entry points. And this is made up of two parts. There's partly an effective stress function, which combines the effects of applied pressure and the suction stress or the internal stress due to soil drying. And also, there's a normalization factor that takes account of the changes in elastic modulus that occur simply because of differences in void ratio. So on the premise that our penetrometer pressure is some linear function of the small strain shear modulus, we can write this model for penetrometer resistance. And in fact, we've published some papers on this, one just recently. And the advantage of this over the simpler model is it's possible to take into account more complex characterizations of soil structure because it has the air entry points in it. And this is something that we're proposing to look at in the future. And this is fitted to laboratory data, in this case for a needle penetrometer, and it's fitted making different assumptions about the applied stress, and we can get good correlations between fitted and measured values. And using those coefficients, it's possible to predict the surface strength of the soil in the field. And so this compares this new function with this very simple model that we showed earlier. So they agree reasonably well, which is encouraging. So the question is to include effects of depth. And we've done this in this model by relating depth to the applied pressure by virtue of the surcharge, so it's a fairly simple modification. And using data from northeast China, which had penetrometer resistance and density and moisture content as a function of depth, it was possible to fit that model to field data. So this shows two sets of data, really. The triangles are the predictions of penetrometer resistance using published values or lab-determined parameter values. So this is the predicted against the measured penetrometer resistance. And these are for two different types of tillage treatment, a no-till and a conventional ridge-till system that's used in northeast China. And in fact, if we fit the data to the field, just use the fitted data, we clearly get much better agreement. So this model now includes effects of depth, density, and soil drying. So what this slide shows, it shows a series of density profiles, typically reported in the literature. So here's a uniform density with a compacted layer. Here's a soil that gradually gets denser. And we've predicted penetrometer resistance profiles for these different density profile scenarios. What it shows is at depth, we get quite high values of penetrometer resistance. So it's worth comparing these values against root elongation data. And in the early 90s, Matuchira and Dexter and others published these elongation rates for roots, and this is the elongation rate in millimetres for roots which have been growing for 10 days in a soil at a penetrometer resistance of 4 megapascals. So 10 days of elongation rate of elongation in this soil produced a fairly negligible roots growth. So if we compare that back with this set of data, it seems probable that under these penetrometer resistances at depth, there will be negligible elongation rates if roots were simply or only able to elongate by deforming soil. So this in part explains why those who have measured it, or measured rooting at depth, show that practically all roots at depth elongate in pre-existing pores. And that's because the soil is probably too strong. Another set of data from a review published in the mid-90s shows different rooting depths for various crop species. And this is for wheat. So they found that the maximum depth of roots for wheat was between 1 and 3 metres in depth. And this sort of data is often taken as evidence that there's some genotypic variability in rooting depth of wheat in this case. However, these differences in rooting depth are easily explained by differences in soil strength profiles. And in fact, in the literature, where you find reports where lots of cultivar comparisons have been made, the big differences in rooting depth are found between different sites, but very rarely between different cultivars on the same site. Another important use of a penetrometer is to estimate soil drying. So this shows penetrometer profiles at different time points during the season in 2013. And these increases in strength are due to the effects of soil drying. And in fact, the drying effect on penetrometer pressure is related to water potential. So these gives a good idea of the increases or decreases in matrix potential due to soil drying. And these data compare penetrometer profiles for 10 different wheat lines obtained this year. This curve here, the original curve, was obtained in March, and this is a soil strength profile or penetrometer profile obtained following almost no drying. And following drying, you get these differences between these wheats. And what was interesting, we could find when we measured soil water content profiles with a neutron probe, we found very little differences between any of these wheats, but we did find quite big differences when we used the penetrometer. So the penetrometer actually seems to be quite a useful roots phenotyping tool to compare different drying patterns by different lines of wheat in this case. So, in summary, the penetrometer can tell us quite a lot about the effects of soil management on its ability to support root elongation. And it's also, both data and models really show why, at depth, almost all roots are found in pores. And also, it can potentially be an important tool to allow us to compare different drying profiles between different wheat lines, which is particularly topical at the moment. And that's Thank you.
Question for Richard. Thank you. Yeah.
No, there are more questions.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you very much for your insightful talk. So, just blow up the slide of dating. There was some before that. So I guess my question is, so you've got a lot of measured Q API values here, and now if you take out, for
Well, these data were collected from three different soil types, and what we were keen to do is to try and establish a common set of parameters that would work for all three soils. We could get improved fits if we fit it, or we can get improved fits. We're marginally better if we fit the soils separately to different soil types. But in my view, anyway, it's more useful to have a model which has parameters which are relatively insensitive to soil type. So I'm not sure if that's answering your question or not. Well, I've never tried that. I mean, we fitted the soil separately, but not to partial data sets.
More questions?
I wonder what the effect of mineralogy would be on the situation.
All I can say is these three soil types, I should have explained probably, range from a sand to a clay soil. And for a pure sands behave quite differently. But I think if on the fits that we've done, that there's always been some clay content there. Pure sands behave quite differently, but I'm not sure that sort of different clay mineralogy would have an enormous effect. I'm not sure.
You've got multiple parameters in your model, but relative to the one of the last slides you showed, in which you have different water content for the soil.
Yes.
Try to validate your model relative to these changing water corresponding water potential?
No, that's a good question actually, because the data we used to fit the field data that we used from China was obtained on relatively wet soil. In those data which showed different drying profiles were from the UK, and what we don't have for that is accurate water potential data with depth, and it's difficult to get it from. Although we have water content data, the big problem is that for this particular soil, for relatively small changes in water content, we get quite big changes in water potential. So we can't really use the water content data from the neutron probe to accurately predict what the water potential is that we'd need to sort of fit in the way you described. However, what we have done is taken cores from the field and equilibrated them on pressure plates and measured needle penetrometer resistances. So we have sort of lab data, but that doesn't include the effect of depth. So I think a particularly big problem in this sort of work is that there's no real good sensors available to measure water potential over a wide range that would need to get accurate data for the sort of things. But it's a good point.
Yeah. One quick question.
I apologize, I was late from another session, so I might have missed this, but do you have a feeling, or have you discussed or looked at how your needle penetrometer compares to other measures in determining soil strength and
resistance,
like cone penetrometers or vein shear testers, or just a simple
bulk density measurement? Okay. Well, we've focused on penetrometers. We've used both needle penetrometer and the large field ones. These data were obtained with a needle penetrometer, and the fits to these with a needle penetrometer give us parameters that predict field penetrometer values reasonably well. The reason we're sticking to penetrometers is that we're particularly interested in root growth, which is why we're doing it. And probably, although the sort of vein shear tests are very useful, they probably don't tell us very much about how roots deform soil.
Okay, thank you. So, any remark, Marcus? Henry?
Okay. Thank you very much for participating in this session. I just wanted to point out that there is another section, which is a poster section, currently ongoing at the exhibition hall. And I think they are poster 1405 through to 1410, also from the Soil Physics and Hydrology Division. So it would be great if you can stop by and see the interesting stuff people from the division are doing. Okay, thank you very much.